Chapter 10. Principle 7. Use visual control so no problems are hidden. If you walked into most manufacturing plants outside Japan in the 1980s, you would see a mess. But it was what you would not see that was most important. You would not be able to see around the piles and piles of inventory that were stacked to the roof. You would not be able to tell whether items were in place or out of place. Certainly, you could not see if there were problems with how work was being done, as Taichi Ono wanted. The accepted dysfunction of the day was to see no problems and hear no problems until the hidden problems jumped up and bit you in the face. By that time, it usually wasn't a problem, but a firefighting crisis, and managers would spend much of their time jumping from putting out one fire to the next. In short, crisis management was the accepted mentality of the day. The principle: clean it up, make it visual. When Americans were making pilgrimages to Japanese plants in the 1970s and 80s, the first reaction was invariably, the factories were so clean you could eat off of the floor. For the Japanese, this was simply a matter of pride. Why would you want to live in a pig pen? But their efforts go beyond making the factory look clean and orderly. In Japan, there are 5S programs that comprise a series of activities for eliminating wastes that contribute to errors, defects, and injuries in the workplace. Here are the 5 S's. 1. Sort. Sort through items and keep only what is needed while disposing of what is not. 2. Straighten. Orderliness. A place for everything and everything in its place. 3. Shine. Cleanliness. The cleaning process often acts as a form of inspection that exposes abnormal and pre-failure conditions that could hurt quality or cause machine failure. 4. Standardize. Create rules. Develop systems and procedures to maintain and monitor the first 3 S's. 5. Sustain. Self-discipline. Maintaining a stabilized workplace is an ongoing process of continuous improvement. In mass production, without the 5 S's, many wastes accumulate over the years, covering up problems and becoming an accepted dysfunctional way of doing business. The 5 S's together create a continuous process for improving the work environment. Visual control systems are about improving value-added flow. Visual control is any communication device used in the work environment that tells us at a glance how work should be done and whether it is deviating from the standard. It helps employees who want to do a good job see immediately how they are doing. It might show where items belong, how many items belong there, what the standard procedure is for doing something, the status of work in process, and many other types of information critical to the flow of work activities. In the broadest sense, visual control refers to the design of just-in-time information of all types to ensure fast and proper execution of operations and processes. There are many excellent examples in everyday life, such as traffic signals and signage. Because it is a matter of life and death, traffic signals tend to be well-designed visual controls. Good traffic signs don't require you to study them. Their meaning is immediately clear. Visual control goes beyond capturing deviations from a target or goal on charts and graphs and posting them publicly. Visual controls at Toyota are integrated into the process of value-added work. The visual aspect means being able to look at the process, a piece of equipment, inventory, or information, or at a worker performing a job, and immediately see the standard being used to perform the task and if there is a deviation from the standard. Ask this question: can your manager walk through the shop floor, office, or any type of facility where work is being performed and recognize if standard work or procedures are being followed? If you have a clear standard for every tool to be hung in a certain place and it's made visual, then the manager can see if anything is out of place. This is why a popular 5S activity is to create shadow tool boards. A shadow of each tool is painted on the board in the place that tool should be hung. For example, the shape of a hammer shows where the hammer goes, so it is obvious if the hammer is missing. Similarly, having clearly visible indicators of minimum and maximum levels for inventory We'll help the manager and everyone else see if inventory is being managed appropriately. Well-designed charts and graphs that are kept up every day can visually control projects in offices. Principle 7 of the Toyota Way is to use visual control to improve flow. Deviations from the standard should be deviations from working to takt time, one piece at a time. In fact, many of the tools associated with lean production are visual controls used to make visible any deviations from the standard and to facilitate flow. Examples include Kanban, the one-piece flow cell, Andan, and standardized work. If there is no Kanban card asking to be filled on a bin, then the bin should not be there. The filled bin without a Kanban card is a visual signal of overproduction. The Andan cord signals a deviation from standard operating conditions. Standard task procedures are posted, so it is clear what the best-known method is for achieving flow at each operator's station. Observed deviations from the standard procedure indicate a problem. In essence, Toyota uses an integrated set of visual controls, or a visual control system, designed to create a transparent and waste-free environment. Visual control and office work. I have spent a lot of time at the Toyota Technical Center in Michigan, where they engineer vehicles like Camry and Avalon. For much of this time, Kunihiko Mike Masaki was the president there. Masaki had worked in many different engineering and manufacturing organizations during his career at Toyota, all using excellent visual controls. So it seemed quite natural to him that the office environment at the Toyota Technical Center should follow the principles of 5S. Twice a year, Masaki would visit each person at his or her desk and ask to see a file cabinet as part of Toyota's document retention program. He audited the file cabinets to see that they were organized properly and no documents were there that were not needed. There is a standard way to organize files at Toyota, and Masaki was looking for deviations from the standard. A report is then filed and a grade is given. If an area is deficient, associates in the area must prepare a plan for countermeasures, and a follow-up review is scheduled to be sure the deficiency is taken care of. Though this may seem excessive or even intrusive for such mundane activities as filing, for the employee it clearly signals the importance of visual control, especially in the light of the fact that this was the president following the Toyota principle of teaching by going directly to the source and seeing for himself. Genchi Genbutsu. More recently, this responsibility has shifted to a vice president and has been expanded to spot auditing of each employee's email organization system to make sure messages are well organized in folders and old messages are discarded. One of the biggest visual control innovations in Toyota's globally benchmarked product development system is the Obeya, Big Room. The system is just a few years old. The chief engineer of a vehicle development project resides in the Obeya, along with heads of major engineering groups working on the project. It is a very large conference war room in which many visual management tools are displayed and maintained by the responsible representatives of the various functional specialties. These tools include the status of each area and each key supplier, compared with the schedule, design graphics, competitor teardown results, quality information, manpower charts, financial status, and other important performance indicators. These tools can be reviewed by any of the team members. Any deviation from schedule or performance targets is immediately visible in the Obeya. The Obeya is a high-security area, and only appropriate representatives from the functional areas are given access. Toyota has found that the Obeya team system enables fast and accurate decision-making, improves communication, maintains alignment, speeds information gathering, and creates an important sense of team integration. When I interviewed Ichiro Michael Jordan Suzuki, the chief engineer of the first Lexus, he was at the Toyota Technical Center to teach them the secret to excellent engineering. His focus on this trip was visual management. He emphasized the importance of using visual management charts and graphs everywhere, showing schedule, cost, etc. on one sheet of paper. He also pointed out that using an electronic monitor does not work if only one person uses that information. Visual management charts must allow for communication and sharing. Keeping it visual through technology and human systems. In today's world of computers, information technology, and automation, one of the goals is to make the office and factory paperless. You can now use computers, the internet, and the corporate intranet to call up large storehouses of data, both written and visual, at lightning speed and share it via various software and email. As we will discuss in the next chapter, Toyota has resisted this information technology-centric trend. As Suzuki pointed out, going to look at the computer screen is typically done by one person in isolation. Working in a virtual world removes you from hands-on teamwork, and more importantly, usually, unless you do your work on the computer, takes you away from where the real work is being performed. The Toyota way recognizes that visual management complements humans because we are visually, tactily, and audibly oriented. And the best visual indicators are right at the worksite, where they can jump out at you and clearly indicate by sound, sight, and feel the standard and any deviation from the standard. A well-developed visual control system increases productivity, reduces defects and mistakes, helps meet deadlines, facilitates communication, improves safety, lowers costs, and generally gives the workers more control over their environment. As the computer, IT systems, and software continue to replace the work of people, and companies continue to move whole departments to countries like India that have a workforce steeped in information technology, Toyota will have an increasing challenge to be competitive using its old physical human system. How can it continue to make the workplace visual and people-oriented while utilizing the power and benefits of computer technology? The answer is to follow Toyota Way Principle 7. Use visual control so no problems are hidden. The principle does not say to avoid information technology. It simply means thinking creatively, using whatever means are the best available to create true visual control. Toyota has already replaced some physical prototype models with digital models on large screens, with high involvement of engineers in critiquing the design. One thing is for certain, Toyota will not readily compromise its principles and goals for something that is merely faster and cheaper, as discussed in the next chapter on new technology. Simply putting everything on the corporate intranet and using information technology to cut costs can have many unintended consequences that can profoundly change or even be detrimental to a company's culture. The Toyota way will seek a balance and take a conservative approach to using information technology to maintain its values. This may entail a compromise, such as maintaining a physical visual signal along with a computer in the background, like in the Toyota Service Parts Warehouse in Hebron. Or it may mean using a wall-sized screen to display a 3D image of a complete vehicle. But the important principle will remain. Support your employees through visual control so they have the best opportunity to do a good job. Chapter 11. Principle 8. Use only reliable, thoroughly tested technology that serves your people and processes. Over the years, Toyota has tended to lag behind its competitors in acquiring all types of new technology. Notice that I said acquiring, not using. Unfortunately, too much of what is acquired by so-called leading-edge companies never really gets into actual use. The Toyota way is to move slowly, because more than one technology has failed to meet their acid test of supporting people, process, and values, and has been yanked in favor of simpler manual systems. Toyota is still following this policy in the age of digital technology. Though Toyota does not lead the industry in acquiring technology, it is a global benchmark on how to use value-added technology that supports the appropriate processes and people. The principle: adoption of new technology must support your people, process, and values. At Toyota, new technology is introduced only after it is proven out through direct experimentation with the involvement of a broad cross-section of people. This does not exclude new or cutting-edge technology. It means that technology has been thoroughly evaluated and tested to ensure it provides added value. Before adopting new technology, Toyota will go to great lengths to analyze the impact it may have on existing processes. First, it will go and see firsthand the nature of the value-added work being performed by the workers for the particular process. It will look for new opportunities to eliminate waste and even out the flow. Toyota will then use a pilot area to improve the process with the existing equipment, technology, and people. When it has accomplished as much improvement as possible with the present process, Toyota will ask again if it can make any additional improvements by adding the new technology. If it determines that the new technology can add value to the process, the technology is then carefully analyzed to see if it conflicts with Toyota's philosophies and operating principles. These include principles of valuing people over technology, using consensus decision-making, and an operational focus on waste elimination. If the technology violates these principles, or if there is any chance it may adversely disrupt stability, reliability, and flexibility, Toyota will reject the technology or at least delay adopting it until the problems can be resolved. If the new technology is acceptable, the guiding principle is to design and use it to support continuous flow in the production process and help employees perform better within the Toyota Way standards. This means the technology should be highly visual and intuitive. Ideally, it will be used right where the work is being done, so it does not require a person in an office to input the data. The important principle is to find ways to support the actual work process while not distracting people from the value-added work. Throughout this analysis and planning, Toyota will broadly involve all key stakeholders in a consensus-building process. Once Toyota has thoroughly gone through this process, it will quickly implement the new technology. Because of this painstaking process, Toyota will typically implement the new technology smoothly without the employee resistance and process disruption that other companies often experience. People do the work, computers move the information. When I teach about Toyota's system, I start with the basics, including Kanban, which is mainly a manual visual process. If there is an information technology specialist in the house, he or she inevitably asks the question, "Isn't there any place for information technology in the Toyota production system?" I reassure them that they are not out of a job, even if their company goes completely lean. But their role may be different. IT will not drive the way Toyota does business and certainly is not allowed to disrupt the values of the Toyota way. Toyota is a modern company, and like any modern company, you could paralyze it in no time by shutting down its computer systems. Computers are used to run finances, pay bills, keep track of millions of customer orders and tens of millions of service parts transactions, capture the data for developing new products, and schedule many things. IT is critical to Toyota, but Toyota looks at technology as a tool that, like any other tool, exists to support the people and the process. For example, at Toyota's service parts operations, they continue to use an old software system developed in-house years ago under much simpler circumstances. It has continuously evolved over the years and does exactly what is needed today. Jane Beseda, General Manager and VP North American Parts Operations, does not see any burning need to modernize it, but she does plan a gradual transition to newer technology. In contrast, I had an interesting consulting experience with an American auto parts supplier that had worked with Toyota for years learning the Toyota Production System, TPS. My client's CEO got hooked on the idea of increasing inventory turns as a major corporate lean goal. He gave all of the business units aggressive targets for inventory turns, which on the surface would seem to support TPS principles of eliminating waste. It became a corporate mania. A large group of supply chain engineers within the company was tasked with addressing this problem. The background of the leader of the supply chain group was in information technology. His main priority was to bring in new internet technology to provide visibility into the supply chain. There are many supply chain software solutions promising to radically cut inventory and provide control over the process. They supposedly do this by showing anyone who logs into the website how much inventory there is in real time at every stage of the supply chain. His subordinates were very proud of their boss, who was extremely intelligent and a fast thinker, and they often repeated a story he would tell. He described supply chain visibility software as analogous to a bulldozer. You can dig ditches manually, and it will work, but a bulldozer will do the same thing in a fraction of the time. IT was like this, speeding up dramatically work that could be done by hand. I was floored by this belief. How does keeping track of inventory on the computer give you any control over making it go away? From my TPS training, I knew that inventory is generally a symptom of poorly controlled processes. Ultimately, manufacturing is about making things. I talked to the boss and gave him my perspective. I explained that software may be very fast, but it is not a person or a machine performing work. In fact, true supply chain visibility is more analogous to setting up a video camera at the worksite and hooking up a remote monitor in another state so you can sit back and watch the ditch diggers work. To get more productivity out of the work process, you have to change the way the work is done by eliminating waste. Supply chain software by itself does not eliminate waste. My perspective was confirmed when we did a project in one of their plants. Without any information technology, we were able to cut inventory by 80% on the assembly line. We did this by moving from the system of pushing inventory according to schedules to a manual pull system using Kanban. Lead time was reduced by one-third with no new technology. To eliminate most of the parts inventory required working with a supplier in Mexico, also owned by the same company, that was pushing as much inventory as it could onto this plant so its inventory turns would look good. Improving the process is the only way you can control inventory. The role of technology, adapting it appropriately. In industry today, the watchword is flexibility. Everyone wants to be as flexible as possible, and Toyota is no exception. Originally, what allowed Toyota to compete with global players was its flexibility. To Toyota, flexibility does not mean pushing the latest and greatest technology onto operations and struggling to make it work. Toyota follows Toyota Way Principle 8. Use only reliable, thoroughly tested technology that serves your people and processes. Again, testing involves both existing technology and new or cutting-edge technology that Toyota has thoroughly evaluated and piloted to prove that it works. One example of this is in the body shop, where the automotive body is welded together. This has been one of the few places for years where a lot of robotics is used, and with great success. But it is also the place that most limits flexibility in making cars. Ultimately, all of the large panels that make up a vehicle must be held in place and welded together just right. There are complex fixtures that hold the parts of the body in place. Originally, these fixtures were specific to a particular car body. To produce a different car body required changing all of the fixtures manually, which took weeks of hard work. Flexible body shops were a major innovation that allowed multiple car bodies to be made in the same shop. And this also allowed for a much more rapid changeover from one year's model to the new model. Toyota eventually learned to do this without stopping the line, called a running change in the industry. Nevertheless, Toyota's body shop still was not very flexible because it used very expensive pallets that were designed to hold the body parts in place for different cars. For example, there would be a Camry pallet and an Avalon pallet, and you could not change the mix of Camry and Avalons that could be run, e.g., going from 70% Camry to 80% Camry, without building new pallets and changing the mix of pallets, an expensive and time-consuming proposition. Now, instead of the car body riding on a customized pallet, it is being held in place by robots that can be programmed for each car body. The bodies ride on something like a ski lift. The earlier pallet system held the body together from the outside in and had fixtures sized and positioned differently for each vehicle. The new system has a programmable fixturing device that holds the parts together from the inside out, a radical new concept that improves flexibility. And it takes up about half the space. Toyota calls this new global standard the Blue Sky System. Among other things, it is not as tall as the old system and has allowed for more blue sky in the body shop, which used to be dark and dingy and now is very open and bright for the people working there. They also call it the Global Body Line, since it is being introduced as a new standard in every Toyota plant in the world. Different car models can be run back-to-back, and the mix can be changed instantly through a change in programming. It is a true one-piece flow and will be a key contributor to Toyota's move toward build-to-order. Often, when manufacturers implement new systems like this, it is a disaster, disrupting production, creating quality problems, and keeping maintenance busy fighting fires for years. But Toyota implemented the Blue Sky technology systematically, module by module, replacing pieces of the old equipment as it was running. They never missed a beat. It is interesting to note that I attended a presentation at the University of Michigan by Toyota's North American president, who described this system to a room full of experts on reconfigurable manufacturing technology. Their immediate question was, how could you anticipate all the benefits of this new technology and cost justify it? His answer made it seem obvious. They did some rough calculations, and based on one changeover in the next few years, the system would pay for itself. It was easy to justify, he said. The experts were shocked, as many had struggled to do careful cost justifications, and their companies demanded a one-year payback or they would not make the investment. At Toyota, the decision-makers are typically very experienced engineers who have worked on the floor. If it seems clear that the new technology has been thoroughly evaluated and will pay for itself in the long term, the decision to adopt it seems easy and obvious. Just as Toyota refuses to push parts made in one department onto another department, Toyota refuses to allow an information technology department or advanced manufacturing technology department to push technology onto departments that do the value-added work of designing and building cars. Any information technology must meet the acid test of supporting people and processes and prove it adds value before it is implemented broadly. Chapter 12. Principle 9. Grow leaders who thoroughly understand the work, live the philosophy, and teach it to others. Even when Toyota promoted someone from an unusual part of the company to save it from impending doom, there has never been a sudden change of direction. Perhaps this is the concept of eliminating muri, unevenness, at work at the executive level. It seems that throughout Toyota's history, key leaders have been found within the company, at the right time, to shape the next step in Toyota's evolution. They have been there across the enterprise, in sales, product development, manufacturing, and design. Hiroshi Okuda was the first non-Toyota family member to take the reins in decades and came at a time when Toyota needed to globalize the company aggressively. After this aggressive period, Fujio Cho, in a calmer, quieter way, continued the globalization of Toyota, building on his experiences in the United States and focusing on re-energizing the internal Toyota Way culture. Despite major differences in personal style, neither of these leaders deviated from the basic philosophies of the Toyota Way. Behind the scenes, the Toyota family has always been there, carefully grooming and selecting the new leaders. Perhaps it is no coincidence that there has always been an internal leader ready to step up to the plate. Toyota does not go shopping for successful CEOs and presidents because their leaders must live and thoroughly understand the Toyota culture day by day. Since a critical element of the culture is genchi genbutsu, which means deeply observing the actual situation in detail, leaders must demonstrate this ability and understand how work gets done at a shop floor level within Toyota. According to the Toyota Way, a superficial impression of the current situation in any division of Toyota will lead to ineffective decision-making and leadership. Toyota also expects its leaders to teach their subordinates the Toyota Way, which means they must understand and live the philosophy. Another important leadership tenet of the Toyota Way is the effort leaders make to support the culture year after year so it can create the environment for a learning organization. In Western companies with revolving door leaders, no one leader is in place long enough to build a mature culture to match their personal vision. So changing the culture each time a new leader comes into office necessarily means jerking the company about superficially, without developing any real depth or loyalty from the employees. The problem with an outsider leading radical shifts in the culture is that the organization will never learn. It loses the ability to build on achievements, mistakes, or enduring principles. This affects the ability of leaders to make effective changes. On the other hand, in Deming's terms, Toyota uses constancy of purpose throughout the organization, which lays the groundwork for consistent and positive leadership as well as an environment for learning. First American President of Toyota Motor Manufacturing. Given that the Toyota way is to make decisions slowly, thoroughly considering alternatives, it was not surprising that Toyota took a very long time to establish NUMMI, its first American plant, and then took its time setting up Toyota Georgetown. While in each case Toyota relied on American leaders, there was a Toyota coordinator from Japan mentoring them behind the scenes, and the top executive was from Japan. So it was big news when Gary Convis was named the first American president of Toyota Motor Manufacturing in Kentucky in 1999. His selection into this critical position, leading Toyota's largest manufacturing plant outside Japan, represented a coming of age for Toyota in the United States. It took Toyota executives about 15 years to develop Convis into someone they could trust to carry the banner of the Toyota way, but the result was a true Toyota leader. His first job out of Michigan State University was in GM's Buick division, where he worked in engineering and production for 3 years. He moved from GM to Ford in 1966. He was not a job hopper and stayed with Ford, moving steadily up the manufacturing organization over 18 years, when an opportunity came up to be interviewed to help lead Toyota's joint venture with GM as general manager of the NUMMI plant. Ford was struggling, and it seemed like a good time to explore new pastures. Little did Gary know that this was not just a career move. His life, personal philosophy, and way of looking at the world would change dramatically as he learned to understand the Toyota way. After 15 years as a student of TPS, Gary is as upbeat, energized, and humble about learning from Toyota as if he was a new employee coming to his first orientation. "I learn all the time, but I don't think I'll finish developing as a human being. One of my main functions now is growing other Americans to follow that path. They call it the DNA of Toyota, the Toyota way, and TPS. They're all just very integrated." Like other Toyota executives, Convis stresses on-the-job experience more than brilliant theoretical insights, which underscores Toyota executives' proclamation, "We build cars, not intellectuals." The fact is, they are as apt to talk philosophy as they are nuts and bolts. But the philosophy driving the principles of the Toyota way is always rooted in the nuts and bolts practice. Gary talks in the self-deprecating but at the same time proud way that is characteristic of his Japanese brethren. "I got where I am because of trial and error and failure and perseverance. That trial and error was on the floor under the direction of my Japanese mentors. I'm very proud to have grown up with Toyota. Some people would look at 18 years and say, 'Well, gee, you spent 20 years in the auto industry before the 18 you just spent with Toyota. You're sort of a slow bloomer.' But this business, I don't think it's one where there are fast bloomers. There's a lot to be said for experience, and if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not a long day, it's a fun day, and it's something you look forward to doing tomorrow." The common themes of leadership at Toyota. Toyota leaders have a distinctive approach and philosophy that fits the Toyota way. On the one hand, leaders can either rule by top-down directives or use a bottom-up involving style to develop people so they can think and make the right decisions on their own. We have seen repeatedly that Toyota leaders are passionate about involving people who are doing the value-added work in improving the process. Yet encouraging employee involvement by itself is not enough to define a Toyota leader. A second dimension requires an in-depth understanding of the work, in addition to general management expertise. It was fashionable in the U.S. in the 1980s to think of the typical successful manager as an MBA who could walk into any business and instantly run it by looking at the numbers and using general management and leadership principles to whip the organization into shape. No self-respecting Toyota manager would subscribe to this notion. The least effective manager in this model is top-down and has only general management expertise, the bureaucratic manager. This characterizes a large portion of U.S. managers. How effective can you be if you are trying to run the organization through command and control without any intimate understanding of what is going on? Your only choice is to make a lot of rules and policies and measure performance relative to those rules and policies. This leads to metrics-driven management that takes the focus away from satisfying customers or building a learning organization. The bottom-up leader who wants to develop employees but does not really understand the work is called the group facilitator. The belief is that if a leader has strong facilitation skills, he or she can motivate employees to work together toward common goals. Facilitators are catalysts but cannot teach or guide the junior people on the content of the work. Leaders like these can be great at motivating teams and helping them to develop, but can they really coach or mentor others in what they do not understand? They don't even have the expertise to judge excellent work and contributions from subordinates. The next type is a top-down leader with a strong understanding of the work, an expert in the field, who lacks people skills and can be a tough taskmaster. The taskmaster treats subordinates like puppets, pulling all the strings at the right time, a major burden since one missed pull of a string might cause the work process to collapse. This type of leader is likely to be distrustful of others with less experience. Like the bureaucratic manager, he or she will give orders, but orders to do specific tasks exactly as ordered. This is the definition of micromanagement. By contrast, the Toyota leaders, by having a combination of in-depth understanding of the work and the ability to develop, mentor, and lead people, are respected for their technical knowledge as well as followed for their leadership abilities. Toyota leaders seldom give orders. In fact, the leaders often lead and mentor through questioning. The leader will ask questions about the situation and the person's strategy for action, but they will not give answers to these questions even though they have the knowledge. The roots of Toyota leadership go back to the Toyota family who developed Toyota Way Principle 9. Grow leaders who thoroughly understand the work, live the philosophy, and teach it to others. If we look at all of the great leaders in Toyota's history, we see they share several common traits. Focused on long-term purpose for Toyota as a value-added contributor to society. Never deviated from the precepts of the Toyota Way DNA and lived and modeled themselves around this for all to see. Worked their way up doing the detailed work and continued to go to the Gemba, the actual place where the real added value work is done. Saw problems as opportunities to train and coach their people. A common phrase heard around Toyota is, "Before we build cars, we build people." The leader's goal at Toyota is to develop people so they are strong contributors who can think and follow the Toyota way at all levels in the organization. The leader's real challenge is having the long-term vision of knowing what to do, the knowledge of how to do it, and the ability to develop people so they can understand and do their job excellently. The payoff for this dedication is more profound and lasting to a company's competitiveness and longevity than using a leader merely to solve immediate financial problems, make the correct decision for a given situation, or provide new short-term solutions to bail a company out of a bad situation. A company growing its own leaders and defining the ultimate role of leadership as building a learning organization lays the groundwork for genuine long-term success. Chapter 13. Principle 10. Develop exceptional people and teams who follow your company's philosophy. Talk to somebody at Toyota about the Toyota production system, and you can hardly avoid getting a lecture on the importance of teamwork. All systems are there to support the team doing value-added work. But teams do not do value-added work. Individuals do. The teams coordinate the work, motivate, and learn from each other. Teams suggest innovative ideas, even control through peer pressure. Nevertheless, for the most part, it is more efficient for individuals to do the actual detailed work necessary to produce a product. Teams can coordinate in meetings, but in most cases, not a whole lot of the detailed work gets done if individuals spend all their time in meetings. Toyota has established an excellent balance between individual work and group work, and between individual excellence and team effectiveness. While teamwork is critical, having individuals work together in a group does not compensate for a lack of individual excellence or understanding of Toyota's system. Excellent individual performers are required to make up teams that excel. This is why Toyota puts such a tremendous effort in finding and screening prospective employees. It wants the right individuals to train and empower to work in teams. When Toyota selects one person out of hundreds of job applicants after searching for many months, it is sending a message. The capabilities and characteristics of individuals matter. The years spent carefully grooming each individual to develop depth of technical knowledge, a broad range of skills, and a second-nature understanding of Toyota's philosophy speaks to the importance of the individual in Toyota's system. Toyota's assumption is that if you make teamwork the foundation of the company, individual performers will give their hearts and souls to make the company successful. Originally, the Toyota production system was called the Respect for Humanity System. As you will read on, you will see that the Toyota way is not about lavishing goodies on people, whether they have earned them or not. It is about challenging and respecting employees at the same time. Launching a Toyota facility in North America. One shot at getting the culture right. By the time Toyota began setting up its service parts facility in Hebron, Kentucky, the management team had learned from experience that a successful startup depended much more on creating a Toyota culture than on building a facility with the right technology. Years earlier, Toyota set up a global service parts distribution center in Ontario, California. While a lot of planning and thought went into the launch of the Ontario, California facility and how to develop the people there, the management team believed it could build on that experience and improve on the launch. The long-term vision for Hebron was to have a service parts operation driven by empowered work teams, as is the case in Japan. But the experience at Ontario taught them that empowering employees too quickly when setting up the facility can be premature. Until individuals and teams really understand the Toyota way and TPS, they are not in a position to be empowered. I visited the Hebron facility about 3 years after it was launched. Management was still in the process of slowly implementing work teams and granting autonomy to workers. What are these people doing that is so complex that they need over 2 years to be ready to contribute as work teams? According to the manager of the facility, Ken Elliott, "We are not building a warehouse. We are building a culture. This is why we have been as successful as we are." He believed it was worth the time to develop the culture early on because we have one shot at this to get the culture right. At Hebron, they began building a culture by using a three-stage process to select the best associates. It took about 1 year to do the bulk of the hiring. First was the written application process. Getting people to apply was not difficult. An announcement was made to the local press that Toyota would be opening the facility and there would be new jobs. The resulting newscast, not a paid advertisement, resulted in 13,500 applicants for 275 jobs. Second, from this pool, they randomly selected a subset to attend a job fair where there were opportunities for informal meetings and assessments. Third, a random sample of those who passed the job fair were invited to 3 one-hour meetings for interviews. Randomness was used to ensure fairness and diversity. After a background check, drug test, and physical exam, the finalists were offered jobs. The early stages of the selection process were designed to winnow down the applications to a reasonable number. The job fair was designed using Toyota Way principles. The goals were both to educate the applicants in Toyota's philosophy and to see who fit in. The fair included presentations on Toyota's history and culture and that of service parts operations, a realistic videotape of what it is like to work in the facility, a review of Toyota's benefits, an overview of the selection process, and finally a written test. The most important process was the third stage of face-to-face interviews to determine whether Toyota could mold the individual's values and personal characteristics into the Toyota way. In the year prior to full launch, 37 associates were hired to be on the design team to develop the operational processes, and 20 others were assigned to support roles. These hourly associates then helped in the interviewing of other hourly associates who would later join their teams. Some associates had to wait a year or more to get their actual job offer. Yet this process was relatively quick and informal compared with the process at other facilities like Toyota Georgetown, where aptitude tests were given and applicants were put on teams to solve problems while being videotaped, and then often waited 1 to 2 years to get their job offers. Elliot had learned from his experience at the Ontario facility the importance of ramping up gradually and systematically. So the Hebron team developed a four-phase implementation process over an 11-month period. In phase one, the facility operated at a very low volume level, so there was a lot of slack time to get the job duties and responsibilities right. The teams worked out the basic operational procedures, often in a crude form, tested standard operating procedures, and trained and taught some more. In phase two, management picked the best suppliers to ship low-volume parts to the operation, and there were only a few resulting problems receiving the parts on time. In phase three, the teams added smaller suppliers that were not as sophisticated in their manufacturing and logistics systems. This added variability to the process, which further challenged associates. In phase four, they finally brought high-volume suppliers online. At each phase, management took the time to teach more of the Toyota way. This staged process also allowed for bringing on hourly associates gradually over time, so all 230 did not have to be trained at the same time. Even within each of these phases, there were multiple live simulations before going live with a new process. Each stage posed new challenges, but the earlier stages built a set of skills and routines, along with confidence. The result was a very smooth ramp-up. Using metrics like fill rate, percent of parts available when customers wanted them, the Hebron facility was the best launch of any such Toyota facility in North America. Work groups are the focal point for solving problems. In a conventional automotive plant, white-collar or skilled trade staff is responsible for problem-solving, quality assurance, equipment maintenance, and productivity. By contrast, shop floor work groups are the focal point for problem-solving in the Toyota production system. The associates who perform the value-added jobs are the most familiar with the actual work and the actual problems that affect the work. Since Toyota exists to add value for its customers, and it is team members who do the value-added work, the team members are at the top of the hierarchy. The rest of the hierarchy is there to support them. The next line of defense is the team leader, an hourly employee who worked on the line but has an opportunity for a small promotion. The team leader cannot take disciplinary action, but is there to support the team members. The first-line supervisor is the group leader, who is responsible for leading and coordinating a number of groups. By the standards of many companies, Toyota has an organizational structure that looks very inefficient. Lots of leaders for a small number of workers. Team leaders typically have just 4 to 8 workers they support, and most of the time the team leaders are not doing production jobs. Group leaders typically have 3 or 4 groups. This concept of bottom-up management and employee empowerment is a cliché in many companies, but Toyota takes this very seriously. The small span of control of the team leaders is more a matter of necessity. In some respects, the TPS bottom-up management is even more challenging for teams because TPS continuously takes the waste out of the value stream. That is, the inventory is taken out of the process and it takes out waste from every job position. On the other hand, traditional job layouts are designed with waste built in, or at least little systematic thought has been given to making the layout efficient and synchronized with other processes. This waste is a cushion from the perspective of the worker. Now, remove that waste and replace it with additional value-added tasks. Suddenly, the worker has to be on his toes. This would arguably be inhumane if it were not for the team leader system. The team leader is like an on-the-spot physician, ready to jump in any time there is a problem, such as when there is a call for help through the Andon system. The team leader is also a safety valve, always walking the line and watching to see if there are any problems emerging, such as parts getting low or someone getting behind who needs assistance or relief. Noteworthy is the progression of responsibilities from team members to group leaders. Team members perform manual jobs to standard and are responsible for problem-solving and continuous improvement. Team leaders take on a number of the responsibilities traditionally done by white-collar managers, though they are not formally managers and do not have the authority to discipline other team members. Their prime role is to keep the line running smoothly and producing quality parts. Group leaders do many things that otherwise would be handled by specialty support functions in human resources, engineering, and quality. They are integral to major improvements of the process, even introducing new products and processes. They regularly teach short topics. If needed, they are also capable of getting on the line and performing the jobs. There is no such thing as a hands-off leader at Toyota. People drive continuous improvement. Toyota invests in people, and in return it gets committed associates who show up to work every day and on time, and are continually improving their operations. On one of my visits, I found that in the past year at the Toyota Georgetown Assembly Plant, associates made about 80,000 improvement suggestions. The plant implemented 99% of them. So how can you get your employees to work diligently, to do their jobs perfectly, and strive to improve every day? Build a system that follows Toyota Way Principle 10. Develop exceptional people and teams who follow your company's philosophy. By first looking at the system dynamics of your organization. Building excellent people who understand and support your company's culture is not a matter of adopting simple solutions or an afterthought of applying motivational theories. Training exceptional people and building individual work groups needs to be the backbone of your management approach, an approach that integrates your social systems with your technical system. Throughout this book, you have seen how one-piece flow drives positive problem-solving behaviors and motivates people to improve. However, you need a social system and culture of continuous improvement to support this behavior. Of course, you cannot pull a ready-made culture out of a wizard's hat. Building a culture takes years of applying a consistent approach with consistent principles. It includes the foundational elements of Maslow. People must have a degree of security and feel they belong to a team. You must design jobs to be challenging. People need some autonomy to feel they have control over the job. Moreover, there seems to be nothing as motivating as challenging targets, constant measurement and feedback on progress, and an occasional reward thrown in. The rewards can be symbolic and not all that costly. In the end, building exceptional people and teams derives from having in place some form of a respect for humanity system. Chapter 14. Principle 11. Respect your extended network of partners and suppliers by challenging them and helping them improve. Auto industry suppliers consistently report that Toyota is their best customer and also their toughest. We often think of tough as difficult to get along with or unreasonable. In Toyota's case, it means they have very high standards of excellence and expect all their partners to rise to those standards. More importantly, they will help all their partners rise to those standards. This chapter explains how this unusual approach to supplier relationships works. The principle: find solid partners and grow together to mutual benefit in the long term. Go to a conference on supply chain management, and what are you likely to hear? You will learn a lot about streamlining the supply chain through advanced information technology. If you can get the information in nanoseconds, you should be able to speed the supply chain to nanosecond deliveries, right? What you are not likely to hear about is the enormous complexity of coordinating detailed daily activities to deliver value to the customer. You are not likely to hear about relationships across firms, about how to work together toward common goals. Yet this is the heart of what has made Toyota's partnership with suppliers a global benchmark. When Toyota started building automobiles, it did not have capital or equipment for building the myriad of components that go into a car. One of Eiji Toyota's first assignments as a new engineer was to identify high-quality part suppliers that Toyota could partner with. At that time, they did not have the volume to give a lot of business to suppliers. In fact, some days they did not build a single vehicle because they did not have enough quality parts. So Toyota understood the need to find solid partners. All that Toyota could offer was the opportunity for all partners to grow the business together and mutually benefit in the long term. So like the associates who work inside Toyota, suppliers became part of the extended family who grew and learned the Toyota production system. Even when Toyota became a global powerhouse, it maintained the early principle of partnership. It views new suppliers cautiously and gives only very small orders. They must prove their sincerity and commitment to Toyota's high-performance standards for quality, cost, and delivery. If they demonstrate this for early orders, they will get increasingly larger orders. Toyota will teach them the Toyota way and adopt them into the family. Once inside, you are not kicked out except for the most egregious behavior. This is not to say that respect for the extended network of supplier partners is analogous to being soft and an easy target. Toyota's view is that, just as it challenges its own people to improve, it needs to challenge its suppliers. Supplier development includes a series of aggressive targets and challenges to meet those stretch targets. Suppliers want to work for Toyota because they know they will get better and develop respect among their peers and other customers. But no supplier I know that has Toyota as a customer believes it is easy to please. From Toyota's perspective, having high expectations for their suppliers and then treating them fairly and teaching them is the definition of respect. Treating them softly or beating them up without teaching them would be very disrespectful. And simply switching supplier sources because another supplier is a few percentage points cheaper, a common practice in the auto industry, would be unthinkable. As Taichi Ono said, "Achievement of business performance by the parent company through bullying suppliers is totally alien to the spirit of the Toyota production system." Partnering with suppliers while maintaining internal capability. Toyota is very careful when deciding what to outsource and what to do in-house. Like other Japanese automakers, Toyota outsources a lot, about 70% of the components of the vehicle. But it still wants to maintain internal competency even in components it outsources. These days, a management buzzword is core competency. Toyota has a clear image of its core competency, but seems to look at it quite broadly. This goes back to the creation of the company, when Toyota decided to go it alone instead of buying designs and parts of cars from established U.S. and European automakers. One of the philosophical roots of Toyota is the concept of self-reliance. It states in the Toyota Way document, "We strive to decide our own fate. We act with self-reliance, trusting in our own abilities." So handing off key capabilities to outside firms would contradict this philosophy. Toyota sells, engineers, and makes transportation vehicles. If Toyota outsourced 70% of the vehicle to suppliers that controlled technology for them and all its competitors, how could Toyota excel or distinguish itself? If a new technology is core to the vehicle, Toyota wants to be an expert and best in the world at mastering it. They want to learn with suppliers, but never transfer all the core knowledge and responsibility in any key area to suppliers. One of the core components of the hybrid engine is the insulated gate bipolar transistor, IGBT. A semiconductor switching device, IGBT, boosts the voltage from the battery and converts the boosted DC power into AC power for driving the motor. Toyota engineers were not experts at semiconductors, but rather than outsource this critical component, Toyota developed it and built a brand new plant to make it, all within the tight lead time of the Prius development. Toyota saw hybrid vehicles as the next step into the future. They wanted self-reliance in making that step. Once they had that internal expertise, they could selectively outsource. Senior managing directors insisted on making the transistor in-house because they saw it as a core capability for future hybrid vehicle design and manufacture. Toyota wants to know what is inside the black box. They also did not want to trust other companies to put the effort they knew they could apply into cost reduction. Toyota decided to work with Matsushita to outsource the battery technology, which is at the center of hybrids and future energy-efficient vehicles. Toyota sorely wanted to develop this capability in-house, but finally did not have the time. Rather than simply handing off responsibility to Matsushita, Toyota established a joint venture company, Panasonic EV Energy. This was not their first experience working with Matsushita. The electric vehicle division of Toyota had already co-developed with Matsushita a nickel-metal hydride battery for an electrical version of the RAV4 Sport utility vehicle, so they had a prior relationship and a track record of successfully working together. Even with this past history of working together, the joint venture tested the company's differing cultures. Yuichi Fujii, then general manager of Toyota's electric vehicle division and Prius battery supervisor, at a point of frustration, said, I have a feeling that there is a difference between an automaker and an electric appliance maker in the way they feel the sense of crisis about lead time. A Toyota engineer has it in his bones to be fully aware that preparing for production development should occur at a particular point in time. On the other hand, I feel that the Matsushita engineers are a little too relaxed. There were also some concerns about Matsushita's quality control discipline, and if the level of quality required for this new complex battery was too high for what Matsushita was used to. Fujii was reassured when he found a young Matsushita engineer one day looking pale. He learned that he had been working until 4 a.m. to finish some battery tests. Yet he had come back in the next day to make sure of just one thing. At that point, Fujii realized that there was a Matsushita style that could work together with Toyota's style. Ultimately, the two corporate cultures did complement each other and produced a world-class hybrid vehicle battery. Even when Toyota chooses to outsource a key component, the company does not want to lose internal capability. Witness Toyota's relationship with Denso. Formerly, Nippon Denso, Japan Electronics, was a division of Toyota. It spun off as a separate company in 1949 and grew into one of the largest global parts suppliers in the world. Denso essentially grew up with Toyota as a partner and is still partly owned by Toyota in the Japanese Keiretsu set of interlocking corporations. Denso was the electrical and electronic parts supplier of choice for Toyota and acted like it was still a division of Toyota. As a general rule, Toyota wants to have at least 2 suppliers for every component, but it broke this rule often in its relationship with Denso, making Denso its sole supplier. So in 1988, when Toyota opened an electronics plant in Hirose and made a major effort to recruit electrical engineers, it was a shock to the industry. Why this seeming reversal of policy? First of all, Denso had become so big and powerful that there were some well-known strains in the relationship with Toyota, such as Denso getting a bit too cozy with Toyota's competition, including Toyota's arch-rival, Nissan. Second, and more importantly, Toyota recognized that electronics was becoming an ever-increasing part of a vehicle, including computerization and the trend toward electrical vehicles. About 30% of total vehicle content these days is electronics-related, and electronics technologies change at a much faster rate than traditional automotive technologies. Toyota believed that it needed to truly master any core technology internally in order to manage its suppliers effectively. For example, understand true costs, and to continue to learn as an organization to stay at the forefront of the technology. Toyota determined that electronics had become so central to the automotive business that only an intensive program of learning by doing could infuse its entire organization with the skills and values essential to making electronics a genuine core competence. Now it is estimated that about 30% of Toyota recruits are electrical engineers. Working with suppliers for mutual learning of TPS. One way that Toyota has honed its skills in applying TPS is by working on projects with suppliers. Toyota needs its suppliers to be as capable as its own plants at building and delivering high-quality components just in time. Moreover, Toyota cannot cut costs unless suppliers cut costs, lest Toyota simply push cost reductions onto suppliers, which is not the Toyota way. Since Toyota does not view parts as commodities to be sourced on the market through open bidding, it is critical that it works with highly capable suppliers that are following TPS or an equivalent system. There are many methods Toyota uses to learn with its suppliers, and in the Toyota Way style, these are all learning-by-doing processes, keeping classroom training to a minimum. The important learning happens through real projects on the shop floor. All key suppliers are part of Toyota's Supplier Association. These are core Toyota suppliers that meet throughout the year sharing practices, information, and concerns. There are committees that work on specific things, including joint projects. In the U.S., BAMA, Bluegrass Automotive Manufacturers Association, was created in the Kentucky area since Toyota suppliers started there. This has now expanded to a national association. Members of BAMA can participate in many activities, including study groups that meet to develop greater skills in TPS. Toyota Way Principle 11 is respect your extended network of partners and suppliers by challenging them and helping them improve. What really cements Toyota as the model for supplier relations is its approach to learning and growing together with its suppliers. It has achieved, in my view, something unique, an extended learning enterprise. This is, to me, the highest form of the lean enterprise. Chapter 15. Principle 12. Go and see for yourself to thoroughly understand the situation. Genchi Genbutsu. In my Toyota interviews, when I asked what distinguishes the Toyota way from other management approaches, the most common first response was Genchi Genbutsu. Whether I was in manufacturing, product development, sales, distribution, or public affairs. You cannot be sure you really understand any part of any business problem unless you go and see for yourself firsthand. It is unacceptable to take anything for granted or to rely on the reports of others. I have often heard the following story, or a variant, from managers of Toyota's Georgetown, Kentucky plant. Reflecting back on the early days when Fujio Cho was the first president of the Georgetown plant, the stories begin with the manager's visits to the factory floor in the morning. On the way in, they notice Cho standing and watching an operation. They pass nearby him, expecting Cho to notice and greet them, but he doesn't respond. He just stands and stares, as if off into space. They walk even closer. He continues to stare. They go about their business, then happen by 15 minutes later. Cho is standing and staring. They wonder if he is ill or frozen to the ground at that point. Finally, Cho relaxes, as if coming out of a trance, notices he is not alone, and says, "Good morning," with a smile. Later, there are some orders from the president's office to tighten up some part of the Toyota production system in the plant. So, what was Cho doing? The only way he could truly understand the state of TPS in the plant was to go and see for himself. Are they following the standard work procedures? Is it a level flow and just in time? Are parts being delivered before they are needed? He must personally observe the flow of material to the line to answer these questions. He must look to see if workers on the line are using the Andon to call for help and stop the line if necessary. And how are the team leaders and group leaders responding? Applying decades of skill, he can see all of this, for himself. He is a black belt of seeing and understanding TPS. He knows that what he sees firsthand would not show up in written reports and tables of numbers, though he wants to see those also. Tables and numbers may measure results, but they do not reveal the details of the actual process being followed every day. Deeply understanding and reporting what you see. Literally translated, Genchi means the actual location, and Genbutsu means the actual materials or products. But Genchi Genbutsu is interpreted within Toyota to mean going to the place to see the actual situation for understanding. Gemba is a term that has become more popular. It refers to the actual place and means about the same thing as Genchi Genbutsu. The first step of any problem-solving process, development of a new product, or evaluation of an associate's performance, is grasping the actual situation, which requires going to Gemba. Toyota promotes and expects creative thinking, and innovation is a must, but it should be grounded in thoroughly understanding all aspects of the actual situation. This is one of the behaviors that really distinguishes someone trained in the Toyota way. They take nothing for granted and know what they are talking about because it comes from first-hand knowledge. It would be relatively easy for management attempting to learn from the Toyota way to mandate that from this day forward all engineers and managers will spend a half hour observing the floor to understand the situation. But this would accomplish very little unless they had the skill to analyze and understand the current situation. There is a surface version of Genchi Genbutsu and a much deeper version which takes many years for employees to master. What the Toyota way requires is that employees and managers must deeply understand the processes of flow, standardized work, etc., as well as have the ability to critically evaluate and analyze what is going on. This may include some analysis of data. In addition, they must know how to get to the root cause of any problems they observe and communicate it effectively to others.